In 1962, it had become very dangerous to be young and male in Southern California. Children, adolescents, and young men were disappearing, some later found dead. Many victims, unfortunately, remain unidentified to this day. The youngest victim was 5. The oldest victim was 28. 62 murders were confirmed. It was suspected there were up to 146. What the police in that area couldn't know back in 1962 was that they would eventually have 3 serial killers on the loose, all targeting young males along freeways. This is the case of Patrick Wayne Kearney, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello and welcome to the Murder Me on Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joining me is Mother. Say hello, Mother.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm sorry if I get a bit distracted. I am busy watching our neighbours appearing to be constructing a chicken shed in their front garden. Remember me talking back in one of the earlier episodes about chickens running around in the street?
Yep.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that. So it's a little bit distracting. I keep seeing it out of the corner of my eye.
So, chickens aside, what have you got for us today, case-wise? I assume it's not about chickens killing people, because that's a shitty story. How can you get killed by a chicken?
Don't start me on that one. But I do have to say there is mention of a dog in this one. I'm sorry, but he doesn't appear to... it's not very nice, but he doesn't die, I don't think. This one, I've heard his name pronounced as Kearney and Kearney. Although I want to say Kearney because of the way it's spelt, which is K-E-A-R-N-E-Y.
So isn't that also a location, like Kearney in Nebraska?
Yeah, but I don't know how you pronounce that again, so I may have been...
I think it's Kearney in Nebraska.
Offending friends. Yeah, but I've watched a documentary on it, and it was pronounced 2 different ways on the documentary. So I'm going to stick to Patrick, so I don't come up with about 15 different versions through the recording. So fair warning, folks. This episode, it could be a bit gruesome.
We had one person that got killed in a septic tank. That's pretty gruesome, and we had a dog die in that one as well.
This is true, but the dog doesn't die in this one as far as I'm aware, but you may not want to listen in the car if you've got children. So it's often reported that this case unfolded when a young man was reported missing by his mother and she refused to take no for an answer from the police. The usual, are you sure he's actually gone missing and all this kind of stuff. It actually started much, much earlier. So back to the beginning. 24th of September, 1939, so 82 years ago, in East LA, Patrick was born. He was the eldest of 3 sons of George and Eunice. George was an LAPD police officer. Eunice was a housewife. Housewife, yeah. They were said that they were honest, decent, fairly ordinary folks, but George was a strict disciplinarian. I suspect it's a product of the times, but there was that. Now, Patrick, multiple places, was described as a slight, quiet, shy boy who was described as thin and scrawny and wore thick glasses. So that's already sounding, you can imagine what his life at school was. He never made friends and was bullied because children could be horrible. It definitely affected him, as he later told people that he would fantasize about killing other children. Now, to be honest, a lot of bullied kids can think like that. They don't go on to act it, and they don't also say that they were 8 years old when they first had those thoughts.
True.
So when he was 13, his father bought him a .22 caliber rifle for hunting animals. Fair enough.
I don't think you say .22. I think you just say he got bought a .22. Yeah. I think it's one of those things.
His father also told him that the best place to shoot a pig was above and behind the left ear, as this caused the least amount of blood to be released. The bullet would lodge in the brain and wouldn't exit. He listened to that. He remembered that. He also enjoyed slaughtering the pigs, because he was left to his own devices, basically, and he was allowed to butcher them. And it said, again, in multiple places, and I don't know how true this is, that he would go as far as to roll about in the intestines and the blood of the pigs after slaughtering them.
I thought you were going to say he had sex with the pigs when they were dead. That's where it went to.
Yeah. I, if his mother was a housewife, and we're talking the 1940s, 1950s, they wouldn't have had biological washing powders. I don't suppose she would have been too impressed trying to get all the blood out of his clothes if he'd have been writhing around in it. Yeah, it could have been naked, but... There is also the mention of him assaulting the dog. I'm sorry. Sexually. But again, it could have just been him enjoying winding up the investigators and the psychiatrists afterwards. There's a lot of feeling that this comes out when you hear what he says. His father decided to quit the LAPD and become a salesman for a travel agency. This necessitated him moving to Wilcox in Arizona. Apparently, Patrick loved languages, and here he became proficient in Spanish, Japanese, and Chinese. Again, absolutely no evidence I could find except in quoted in one place, but it may well go to his supposed IQ, which was tested at a later date. So we'll get to that.
You said Spanish, Japanese, and Chinese. That's a lot of languages. I'm learning French and Spanish on Duolingo at the minute, and it's hard. I can say hello and I am a cat and a horse.
Yeah, again, I don't know how much credence we can give to this. I really don't. It's really
difficult.
It's going
back some now. Yeah.
So anyway, the family moved to the South Bay area in Redondo Beach in California. And in 1957, he graduated high school. And then he moved himself to Long Beach in California. And in 1958, at the age of 19, he joined the US Air Force. He had hoped to see the world, but he got stationed in Texas. In 1960, he meets someone called David Hill, and they start a relationship. Now, it's debatable whether it was a friendship at that time or the relationship came later. But in 1961, Patrick is honorably discharged from the US Air Force. Fun note, exact same article said later on it was a dishonorable discharge. So,
did they give the reason why he was discharged?
No, but this, it may well link in. Hill had been definitely dishonorably discharged from the army, and it was said that it was for an unspecified personality disorder. Yet again, can't verify if that's true. And I did wonder if the personality disorder was a way for the military to get rid of him under the anti-homosexual regulations, which were active in 1949 to 1993.
I was going to ask, when did they end that?
Yeah, so this is makes me wonder whether they said that Patrick was honourably discharging it. The same article said dishonourably.
It might have been at the time.
Yeah, because
for.
In the 1970s, a gay service member who had not committed any homosexual acts while in service generally received a general discharge, while those found to have engaged in homosexual conduct more often than not received an undesirable discharge.
Do you think with the whole discharge for being gay, do you think that was more so for the public perception of the armed forces rather than them actually being gay themselves? Because if you've got bigoted people at the time, they think, I don't want to join the army because there might be gays in there.
I don't think that generally crossed people's minds. I just think it was a sign of the times. And the fact that large groups of men in together, that behaviour would have not been unreasonable whatsoever, but the public may not have actually even thought about that. I mean, look what used to happen at private schools, boarding schools for boys and for girls. It was very, very common to have homosexual relationships, but in the UK, it was illegal till God alone knows when. And in the US, after this period, they did the don't ask, don't tell. But if you were found out, you were still kicked out. So I do think that they were found out that they did have a relationship, and that's why they both ended up leaving the military. One was Army, one was Air Force. There probably wasn't. In the UK, there is definitely a, I want to say, banter, but it's not. There is between the military strands, there can be some.
There's huge, and some of it is quite funny. There's a lot of memes online about people. If you're in the army, and if you were to take pre-workout, for example, in the army, you scoop it, you just down the thing straight away. If you're in the Air Force, it's not a pre-workout. It's an iced latte, and you mince onto the scene. And if you're in the Marines, you just snort the fucking thing. And there's loads of memes about that. Or how you get driven to camp, and some of them are, they're in the back of the convoys.
You wouldn't expect the military, different strands of the military.
They do. It's almost like a football team.
Yeah, so I think it was unusual for these two different branches of the military to actually form a relationship. So this is why I think they were more than friends right back at the beginning, and this is why it happened. Now, David Hill was born in Lubbock, Texas in 1942, so he was younger. Hill was a high school dropout, and he's been described as one of life's natural born slackers, and he only seemed to ever have low skilled, short term, temporary type jobs. And apparently, they made an odd looking couple. Patrick was 5'7" and quite wimpy looking, and I've seen pictures, and he's not an attractive specimen. And Hill apparently was 6 foot tall, muscular, hulking, bit of a catch. During that period, Hill would leave and marry a woman and have a child and return to Patrick, leave, go back to his wife, rinse and repeat. And it was during one of these breakups in the spring of 1962 that Patrick began his killing spree or campaign. His first victim was a 19-year-old. Patrick picked him up on his motorbike, shot him in the head, sodomised him, then mutilated his body before throwing it off Highway 86. He followed this with two other kills, a 16-year-old, and it said that this was his first victim's cousin.
His what? His first victim?
Victim's cousin. And he was chosen as Patrick had seen, he'd seen Patrick pick his cousin up on the bike and Patrick knew he'd been seen. And then came an 18-year-old. None of those three have been formally identified to the public. It's possible that police probably do know who they are, but they just haven't released the information and it's a long time ago, so... By August 1963, Patrick was earning $20,000 a year as a senior research assistant at the Hughes Aircraft Corporation in Culver City. Now, adjusted for inflation, that is $173,000 or £125,000. So that's quite
a
nice...
He's getting a decent wage.
He's gotten a decent salary.
He's got that bag.
Which is just as well because Hill, again, still didn't have a job, just casual random work here and there, and it was causing friction. They moved to Culver City in 1964. In 1966, Hill and his wife actually finally divorce. Now, there's a lot of talk with multiple dates of Patrick cooling off and not killing for years and that Hill kept him stable. It's doubtful. I suspect he just took it south of the border for a while. Patrick made frequent trips to Tijuana in Mexico, where it's believed to have committed several murders, and Hill is suspected of accompanying him more than once on these murder trips. Patrick rarely deviated from his MO, which is one of the reasons why the police in Mexico think he was responsible for a number of killings in and around Tijuana.
It sounds like instead of sex tourism, it's murder tourism. He's fucking off to Mexico to kill people.
Yeah.
And kind of have sex with them. Sometimes they're not exclusive.
Again, the police think he in Tijuana think he's done all these murders. There's no way I can actually trace how many murders they think he's responsible for. They definitely found one many years later, but that's only because Patrick told them where to look for him. But Americans wouldn't have extradited Patrick to Mexico. They would want the first dibs on him. Hmm. So Mexico can say, well, we haven't officially closed these, but we've got 10 that we think he did. That's my guess on that one. Now, one that's definitely recorded was a friend of both Patrick's and Hill called George. He accompanied them to Mexico in December of 1967, and Patrick is said to have shot him. His remains were found in 1977.
Why?
Because he just did these things. Apparently, George was asleep in another room, and he just went in with a gun, like he had these guns, and he just shot him in the forehead.
It was the way that you said it. Oh, he shot him. Why?
Yeah,
most people do things for a reason. Might not be a valid reason.
He could have had a row with Hill.
Yeah, true.
They seem to
it's
be...
It's a bit volatile.
They do seem to be quite volatile. I mean, there was somewhere that I read that he took him into the bathroom, actually skinned him in the bath, and then buried his remains near wherever they were staying. So, but again, who knows? Patrick and Hill, they split in 1971. Hill left him a note and took off, and apparently this set Patrick into this final tailspin. So 1971. So on the 26th of June, he picked up a 13-year-old, John Demchik, who was standing at a corner of Inglewood. How it was described, it sounded like a hitchhiking situation, but who knows. When he got him into the truck, he shot him in the head. And then he drove to a secluded area 15 miles southeast where he dragged the unconscious. The boy wasn't actually dead. He was unconscious. Dragged him from the truck and into a nearby gully or valley. He then undressed him, sexually abused him, and he left him to die naked in the gully. And his body wasn't found for 20 months. So that was in the June. Didn't seem to do anything for 2 years. But then in September of 1973, he killed James Barwick, who was age 17. Ronald Smith, who was 5, was killed on the 24th of August 1974. His body was found in October 74. Patrick killed twice in 75. His first victim was Albert Rivera, who was 21. And his second victim was Larry Walters, who was 20. He had a very busy year in 1976. He murdered.
What do you mean very busy? You've mentioned about 10 people so far. One of them was a child.
A 5-year-old, yeah.
Why did he kill a child?
That's, well, like, this is where, and there was, yeah.
This is where some of the sexual perversion comes in, because yeah. Everyone else that he's killed so far, he seemingly has had sex with, and then you'd like to think he hadn't with the child, but the inference can be made, unfortunately.
Well, he's actually on record as being a paedophile necrophiliac, so there is that. So I said, he had a busy year in 76, he murdered 12 people.
Fucking hell.
March.
Calm down, lad, 12 people, Jesus.
Kenneth Buchanan, age 17.
I don't think I know 12 people.
March, Oliver Molitor, age 13. 19th of April, Larry Armadiradiris, age 15. 16th of June, Michael McGee, age 13. So see, all of these are young, very young boys.
So there's a distinction that's not often made. People just kind of clump it in together as paedophilia, someone that's under the age. But there's another term, it's hemophilia, and for some reason I keep thinking of hemophiliac, which is when your blood doesn't clot, which is completely different, but it's sexual interest in like teenagers, because there is a difference between someone that is pre-puberty and post-puberty.
Yes.
And that's one that often isn't made.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, so he sounds like he's more of a hemophiliac than a paedophile. Which...
No, not if you've got a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Yeah, true. I'm just thinking, cause, but it sounds, but the most recent ones you've mentioned are ones going for teenagers.
And you've got a 17-year-old that could be have hit puberty, and you can have...
Well, it's people that are from like 14 onward, I think. Mm. I'm not sure. Again, by the way, I did have to Google this. I don't just have this information on tap.
Well, I won't read out the list of the rest of them because, I mean, it's just...
You're just scrolling, there's a lot.
Yeah, it's really... That was horrible, 12 in that year. Now, Patrick's last year of murder was 1977. Nicholas Jimenez, age 28, was killed on the... killed on the 23rd of January in Los Angeles. In February, Arturo Marquez, age 24, was killed in Los Angeles. Now, this is... He's going older. But The next one is significant.
How old is he by this point? Because you say he was born in 39, didn't you?
Yeah.
So he's getting on now in terms of it.
Yeah, he's in his 40s, yeah. So you've got...
Well, he's 35, isn't he? When did you say 74? He's about 35.
John Otis LeMay, he was 17. He was killed on the 13th of March. And this was the murder that led to Patrick's arrest. Merle Chance was killed on the 16th of April. On the 6th of April. Merle was smothered with his own sweater and his body was found on the 26th of May. Now, Patrick, he would cruise the gay bars and they used to have bathhouses as well back in those days, and he'd pick up young men in his car or his truck who were hitchhiking. Hitchhiking was very, very common. It didn't mean that you're a sex worker, but the police seemed to have assumed... I'll get to it, but they've taken some really wild leaps on this one. Now, Patrick preferred to pick up men who were bigger than him and subdue them quickly by shooting them in the temple above the ear without warning with a Derringer .22 pistol while driving. Yeah. He would leave the bodies slumped in the passenger seat and drive to a secluded area where he would undress them and sodomise the bodies. So this is the necrophilia. He would then often bring them home and put them in the bath and drain the blood. Often he would beat the victim's body, which says rage. Yeah? He would use...
That says rage.
Yeah.
I thought the point before that when he picks up young boys and then shoots them in the back of the head or the temple.
No, it's the continued assault of a dead body.
Well, yeah, it's like when people say, I didn't mean to kill them, but you stabbed them 50 times.
Yeah.
You definitely did.
Yeah. Well... He would use a hacksaw and he would butcher the body and he would place the body parts in industrial plastic trash bags, bin bags, and dump them either along the freeways or in the desert or canyons or even landfills. Patrick later claimed that the victims resembled people who had bullied him in his childhood and that by killing them and beating their body, he was able to vent his anger, which...
There's a saying, hurt people, hurt people. Mm. So this kid being bullied.
At the end of 77... Hill and Patrick, they're back together again. But the body count had been rising, but the police were now in a position to link many of the murders because of their particular MO. So going back to John LeMay, who I'd mentioned before, he was 17-year-old. He didn't come home on Sunday the 13th of March 1977. His mother was married.
She was married, was she? I assume you meant married.
Worried.
Oh, fuck. You got it definitely wrong then.
Yeah. So next day she called a friend of her son's and he told her that he apparently was meeting a guy called Dave in Redondo Beach. She'd never heard of this Dave. She reported her son missing and kept pushing the police to investigate. She even had the address that her son was supposed to have gone to. So get investigating. Glad she never went to the house to check it out herself because I don't think that would have ended well. John LeMay had met Dave, or aka David Hill, at a local gym, and David invited him over to Patrick's home. When he arrived there sometime after 6 o'clock, Hill wasn't there, but Patrick invited the teenager in to wait for him. Whilst he was sitting down watching television, Patrick pulled out this Derringer and shot him in the back of the head.
Is he used the same gun every single time?
Don't know. I would maybe not, but it's obviously his preferred.
It's a running theme.
Yeah. He apparently dismembered him and dumped him in the desert south of somewhere called Corona, and his remains were found 5 days later.
It's always Corona that comes and gets you, isn't it?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that one. Right, so the body had been drained of blood and washed and then cut up before packing them into...
Do you think he was ahead of his time in the way that he's dismembering people like this and draining them? Because I'm surprised he didn't do stuff with the teeth as well, just to make it harder to identify people. I'm surprised he hasn't done that, because it's... Did you ever watch Dexter?
No, but...
And that was really...
You've actually jumped ahead to something. Oh, yeah.
Carry on.
You didn't know. No, carry on. No, Dexter.
So that's what he'd do in Dexter.
I know he used to line the room with plastic or something, didn't he?
Yeah, so he'd set up kill rooms, which is a bit fictional, the way that would be done. And he'd follow you, find out you're a teen, kill you. Obviously very different to this, but he'd dismember you and do stuff like that and then drop the body parts in different places in the ocean so you're hard to find, blah, blah, blah. But it's the dismembering part, because he's like, it's difficult to transport people if they're in one piece. And it just seems that if he's disarticulating people back in the 70s, then it's...
Yeah.
It seems a bit of a head of his time. But I know he's got this experience butchering, but there's a difference between butchering a pig and butchering a person.
My understanding is if you know even the basics of anatomy, it's not that difficult if you know how to get into the joints. But that's... This particular case... When they found John's body, there were two bags discarded on the ground and three others were stuffed into a nearby 80-gallon oil drum, and they never did find John's head. So John's mother had gone to the police. She had the address, and the police go knocking on the door. And apparently, even though he'd had this good income from the Hughes Corporation, it seems he wasn't working there anymore because the house described as tatty. That's the only way to put it. And... David Hill and Patrick were there and they welcomed the police in. They expressed their shock at the killing of John and offered their full support. The police, don't know how they managed it, but must have had search warrants in advance. They took samples of carpet fibres, and the forensics then were actually able to match these carpet fibres with fibres found on the tape that had sealed these rubbish sacks. And encouraged by that, the police returned a second time. And this time they requested samples of their pubic hair and samples of their dog's hair. Both Patrick and Hill complied with their request. Now they were starting to get worried.
They should have gone out of wax. Should have a Brazilian. I don't have any pubes. Ugh. Can't have them.
Yeah, they were starting to get worried. And they should have done, because obviously there was a match with the forensics. And when the police returned a third time with a full search warrant... The two had gone. They'd gone on the run. They were in El Paso in Texas. So the police had the warrant. Didn't matter they weren't there. They decided to go on full out into the house. They found a hacksaw with dried blood in the corners, residual blood not visible to the naked eye in the bathroom, and the same type of nylon filament tape used to seal the bags in which John LeMay had been found. A further search of Patrick's office revealed the exact same type of industrial trash bags. And police had now linked those bags to a minimum of 20 murders. He kept the same goddamn roll, or kept buying them from the same place that must have had some identifiable markings on them or something. But back in the times, they printed wanted posters and they were sent to police stations all over the west coast of the USA. And Patrick and David Hill had seen these and they realised that arrest was inevitable. And after they talked to their family members, God alone knows how that conversation went, they actually walked into a local police station, pointed at their wanted poster on the wall and said, "We've come to hand ourselves in."
Why?
I don't know. They just decided it was probably preferable to hand themselves in than get pulled over and possibly shot.
Do you remember there's a guy in the States who tried to hand himself in to claim the reward for being wanted?
Oh, yeah.
I thought that's what you were going to say, that they were trying to go for that, but yeah. No, I wonder why they tried to hand themselves in. I don't understand why. If they've been... I mean...
They're going to catch them anyway, eventually, I would think. They're not that smart, the pair of them.
They've been prolific murderers.
They are.
This entire time.
Patrick is very, very smart. We'll get on to that. Patrick made a full confession, exonerating David Hill. He admitted responsibility for 28 murders. This was increased later to 35. Police questioned him about whether he had ever inserted anything into the anus of any of his victims. This had been the MO of Randy Kraft. Patrick said he didn't need to. I am not the wooden stake. He said he did it because the killing excited him and gave him a feeling of dominance. A psychiatrist who interviewed Patrick after his arrest determined that he had an IQ of 180, which is well above what's considered genius level.
I don't know, though. The stuff for IQ is weirdly inflated or skewed. Just because you've got a high IQ doesn't mean you're smart. It just means you test well.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. But yeah, and if he'd have been that smart, he wouldn't have been caught with...
He wouldn't have been caught and he wouldn't have handed himself in.
He wouldn't have had the trash bags that they could link back to him.
You'd like to think you'd think that far ahead.
You would hope, but anyway. Well, no, you wouldn't, because otherwise you wouldn't catch all the killers, would you?
True.
Patrick was charged with 21 murders and pled guilty. The judge, Judge Beckenridge, said... This defendant has certainly perpetrated a series of ghastly and grisly crimes. I can only hope the Community Release Board will never release him. He appears to be an insult to humanity. Now, as of June 2013, Patrick is incarcerated in the California State Prison of Mule Creek. He got 21 life sentences. David Hill walked free after the Riverside County Grand Jury refused to indict him. There was an awful lot of speculation that Hill was equally guilty of a lot of these murders, and some even think that Patrick took the fall for him. Can't see that myself, but you do have to have been blind and deaf not to figure something was wrong in that household. Patrick became what is known as the trash bag killer, because all these body parts were in trash bags, or bin bags as we would call them in the UK. But for a while, he was also lumped in as the freeway killer. The two other serial killers that fall under that moniker I've mentioned are William Bonin and Randy Kraft, who I mentioned earlier. He's the one with the wooden stake inserting it in the anus. As a 21-year span of murders that was long before DNA and advanced forensics, no one knew initially that they were not one and the same, hence the wooden stake comment and Patrick being unimpressed who was being accused of someone else's act. Patrick was actively killing, that we know of, 1962 to 1977. He admitted 25 and is suspected in up to 43. Randy Kraft was active 1972 to 1983. He admitted 16 and is suspected of 67. William Bonin was active 1979 to 1980. He admitted 21, convicted of 14, but suspected of over 36. So we actually only have one overlap of serial killing with Randy Kraft, and that period was 5 years, which is 72 to 77. But that's why all three of them, if you do a search and you put in the freeway killer, you will get all three names up. But yeah. Now, killers can be given multiple names by multiple sources, and it depends on how many use the name, and it's the one that sticks. So you've got news reporters, you've got newspapers, you've got radio, you've got TV. Sometimes they get it very wrong, lumping more than one killer together, as in this episode, because, well, there are a lot of serial killers out there. And I guess it gets more difficult to come up with something that's snappy for news headlines. One place stated that the police had their own nickname for Patrick. And it's really, really unfortunate, but again, a sign of the times. Now, again, I go back to these kids were often, apparently, according to Patrick, they were hitchhiking. The 5-year-old, the 8-year-old definitely weren't. They were, you know, minding their own business and he picked them up. But the police actually believed that most of these hitchhikers were gay. And they actually had their own name. They called it the Fag in a Bag Killings, which is very unfortunate.
I mean, it's snappy.
Yeah. So, what is a serial killer? There's multiple definitions, so it's a bit fluid. Anything from 2 to 4 victims over a period of time, up to a month, often with, but not always, having a sexual undertone.
I didn't know that was a required part of a serial killer.
Yeah.
And you said not always, but often.
It is, however, always about power. As of 2014, serial killings account for no more than 1% of all murders committed in the US. From FBI crime statistics, there are approximately 15,000 murders annually. So that means that there are no more than 150 victims of serial murderers in the US in any given year. The FBI estimated that there are between 25 and 50 serial killers operating through the US at any given time.
That feels much lower than the figure I'd expect. I'd expect it to be much, much higher than that.
Well, let me get to that in a minute. Figures for the UK are less than accurate. We don't have the same problems as the USA in that the police forces... Well, we have the same problems as the USA in that the police forces don't talk to each other. But we also don't have the equivalent of the FBI. So no overarching group to keep track of figures.
Also... the UK can basically fit into Texas or Florida.
Well, the closest I was able to find that we in the UK have had 62 known serial killers in the last few hundred years, starting, I think, with Jack the Ripper. And in these figures, they did include Harold Shipman, the Doctor of Death, and the other ones. And even Professor David Wilson, again, who I've referenced previously, has been quoted as saying that he thinks that there are at least 2 active serial killers in the UK at any one time.
That seems like such a low figure, though, for considering true crime, serial killers, blah, 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 such a huge, almost industry at this point. It's become a bit of a meme now where I think that podcasts are going to start killing people in weird ways so that you have something to talk about. It's not just, oh, he was killed by getting hit with a... It was chopped up in a van. I'd be like, yeah, but it was an ice cream truck, and then he got blended and fed to kids. Like, I can imagine some weird shit happening just so it becomes a fancy story for a podcast.
A very famous case, and people are shouting at their devices now. He was a news reporter, I believe, and he was killing people to be able to report on them.
That's like there's people that set fires just so they can save them, though.
Yeah. Well, when you put all of this in perspective, the size of the UK and how many times it would fit into the USA, that would mean that you would probably expect the serial killers active in the USA to be much larger, perhaps in the 150s. But when you work out the population density, the figure of 25 to 50 is probably actually right. I've actually seen figures of between 2 and 4,000 serial killers active at any one time for the USA. I think that's ridiculous, but it's still an opinion.
Yeah, because you've got to think how many people that are serial killers that aren't even remotely considered. So like care home killers or people that work in the medical industry.
Unless you catch them. And unless you are actually able to forensically link them, that's assuming you find the bodies.
Yeah.
How many bodies out there? How many people just go missing because they're allowed to go missing? They're adults.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's talk about some myths. Mm. Serial killers are
Bigfoot.
Well, he could be a serial killer for all we know. Serial killers are all dysfunctional loners. Many serial killers hide in plain sight within the community.
Oh, sorry. I forgot you said that these are myths. I was immediately thinking, wrong.
Yeah.
So, sorry. So they're...
They hide in plain sight in the communities. Serial murderers often have families and homes, gainfully employed, and appear to have normal lives because many serial murderers can blend in so effortlessly. They are often...
About as effortlessly as you said that.
Yeah. Teeth don't fit. No alcohol involved. You have Robert Yates. He killed 17 prostitutes in Spokane, Washington during the 1990s. He was married, 5 children, lived in a middle-class neighbourhood, blah, you know. He was eventually arrested and pled guilty to 13. Green River Killer, Gary Ridgway.
I've heard of that. Why have I heard of that?
The very famous Green River Killer. He confessed to killing 48 women over a 25-year period. He would pick up prostitutes and had sex with them. And he was employed and he was married. He attended church. He read the Bible at home and work and talked about religion with co-workers. BTK killer.
Dennis, Mind Torture Kill.
Yep, that's the one.
I know that one.
Dennis Rader. He killed 10 victims in and around Wichita, Kansas. He sent 16 written communications to the news media over a 30-year period, taunting the police and the public. He was married with two children, was a Boy Scout leader, served honourably in the US Air Force, was employed as a local government official, and was president of his church. And that's how we know him. It was the infamous floppy disk. He actually asked them if he sent them a floppy disk, would they be able to check who, you know, trace him? And of course they went, no. And he sent them a floppy disk, and when they went rooting around in it, they found it had stuff on from the church, and that's how they managed to catch him.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know this, right? And for any budding serial killers out there, you now know. So when you overwrite something on a hard drive, so if you say you have a terabyte of hard drive, and it gets, when you delete something, you technically don't delete it. No. All it does is it allocates it for when you save something else.
Future use.
It overwrites that thing in the first place. It doesn't actually delete anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you get artifacts. There are companies that will get hardware from fires, house fires, and then they can recover information on these hard drives because they can find them and plug them in because there are these little artifacts that are stored. There'll be probably artifacts in a floppy disk. What sort of fuckwit do you have to be?
Question.
Yeah.
Do you know what a floppy disk is?
Yes, I do know what a floppy disk is because that is the save symbol on every video game ever. And, you know, me being born in the late 1900s, I think we had some.
Yeah, we did. We did when you were a child. But the first floppy disks that we had, and I know there's people listening to this will remember these things, they were the size of an album. You know,
an LP.
Album. And they were bendable. You could bend these damn things. You used to pop them in these districts. Never mind, I'm not going because you're looking at me with absolute horror on your face. So let's go back to these myths. Serial killers are all white males. No, Derek Todd Lee was an African-American. He killed at least 6 women in Baton Rouge. Coral Eugene Watts, African-American, killed 5 victims in Michigan. Rafael Resendez Ramirez, native of Mexico, murdered 9 people in Kentucky.
How come you could say his name so clearly, but you couldn't say the word effortlessly?
I don't know. I've got Colombian. I've got a Hong Kong one. No, it goes across all nationalities, all races. There is no, you know, there's no discrimination. If you're going to be a serial murderer, it doesn't matter what you think you are. Serial killers are only motivated by sex. As I said earlier, there are many...
This case excluded, because this one seems to be.
Yeah. There are many other motivations for serial murders, including anger, thrill, financial gain, and attention seeking. There is no generic template for a serial killer. Serial killers are driven by their own unique motives or reasons, and they are not limited to any specific demographic group, such as their sex, age, race, or religion.
Yeah, to say that something is as they're motivated by the same thing, that's like saying people are motivated by the same thing for anything. I don't see why something like killing people would be a specific trait that it has to be for X, Y, Z on every single person.
Now, everything talking about these myths, I got this from an FBI paper, which will be referenced in the show notes. And one particular piece that was actually really interesting. The majority of serial killers who are sexually motivated eroticized violence during development. For them, violence and sexual gratification are inexplicably intertwined in their psyche, which leads me back to Patrick and the bullying and the supposed rolling in the pig's blood. That's where my brain...
Yeah, there's a thing about formative years, isn't it? What you're around at the time.
Now, I did some digging around in serial killer numbers, and again, these were quite horrific. There were so many websites that you couldn't verify where they got them from. When I linked into one thing, it took me back to something else, they took me into someone's blog post, which then they referenced somebody else's blog post, who then referenced something from the FBI, but then didn't reference the FBI report that I could verify where it was. But these figures, they sounded quite interesting.
Do they sound interesting, or they just sound good for a podcast?
No, they were quite horrifying. The 10 state, this is obviously the USA because I can't find anything for the UK, with the most total serial killer victims as of 2021. So California had 1,628 serial killer victims. Doesn't say when they started, whether it was the last 10 years, the last 20 years, the last 30 years. So I'm looking through all of these and I'm thinking, how do you verify any of this information? That just isn't...
Yeah.
You can't.
But as well, though, is if it's per capita, because if you have a tiny little state versus Texas, taxes would probably be higher.
Well, if I rank them, I don't give the numbers out because I think the numbers are meaningless, but it would actually, you would think probably from the population density like we talked about, the top one would be California, number two was Texas, number three was Florida, number four was Illinois, number five was New York, very high population density, number six was Ohio, seven Pennsylvania, eight was Washington, nine Michigan, and 10 was Georgia.
So I know it's different because it's not the same as a serial killer, it's gun crime, but I'm surprised Chicago wasn't high up on the list.
That's a city though, isn't it? What state is Chicago in?
Ah, shit, that's a good point. Hang on. Okay, so it is Illinois, which number four turns out. For some reason, I thought... Why did I think Chicago was a state? No, it's not.
It's a big old place.
Yeah. So, yeah.
So if anybody's wondering, there are no verifiable figures on sexual orientation of serial killers. Lot of figures banded about on a lot of very unpleasant websites, but nothing definitive. And going back to that report from the FBI, as I said, I have referenced it. Serial killers come from all walks of life, in all colours and creeds. There was a mention of a brief marriage for Patrick too, you know, along with David Hill's one. But again, it's only mentioned in two places and one seems to be a replication of the first one. So I don't know. I also discovered one victim that supposedly got away and wrote a book. But then in various comment sections, I noted other victims' relatives stating that what this guy was saying about their relative's murder was completely incorrect. And others saying that they read the book and it was absolutely wrong on so many facts. So unless you can actually get the transcripts of the interviews and possibly the trial, it's been a case of cross-checking over and over and over and having to discard so much as uncorroborated or just a writer's imagination. Even old news reports off microfiche are full of random inaccuracies. Although one old advert caught my eye and made me laugh. Right. Crisp and tasty fried fish served with homemade hush puppies, French fries, tartar sauce and coleslaw for $1.39. The reason I laughed, and not just the price, is that hush puppies are a brand of shoes in the UK and coleslaw seemed a really random addition. So I had a really weird monologue going on in my head when I was reading that one.
I remember slush puppies were those...
No, hush puppies.
Oh, hush puppies. But why am I thinking of... I was thinking of...
Slush puppies? The drink? Yeah, the ice...
I was thinking of slush puppies. They're like those... It's like ice mixed with just colourants and sugar.
Yeah, exactly. I'm assuming that they've got those in the US as well. But hush puppies, maybe that's what they call them.
I don't know what they are.
No, hush puppies are shoes in the UK, but anyway. So that is the case of Patrick Wayne Carney, Kearney... Murderer, paedophile, and necrophiliac, the trash bag killer. Thank you for listening and look forward to sharing another case with you next week.
You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Murder Me and Monday Podcast and email us at murdermeandmondaypodcast@gmail.com. I say us, it ain't me. I don't check it, it's mother. But we'll see you next time. Thank you very much for listening. Peace.